Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Welcome to the Muslim Philanthropy Podcast at American Muslim Community Foundation. My name is Muhi Khwaja, and today we have on Patty Walsh from CARE Minnesota. She is the Development Director. Welcome to the show, Patty.
Thank you very much for having me, Muhi. I really appreciate your asking me on.
Of course. So, you know, on the show, we love to get a sense of the nonprofits that we support, the nonprofit leaders who are there. Tell everybody a little bit more about yourself and your background.
Sure. Well, we'll start with my origins. I'm from New Jersey and Detroit, weird background. It's a long story how I landed here, but I've been in Minnesota since 1984, so I feel like a Minnesotan now. My career background have not always been in nonprofits. I'm in my second career, actually. I've got a background as a legal administrative assistant, and I kind of, I lost the job several years ago and went back to school, and wound up with a certificate in public relations. I wound up interning at a Somali women's organization, advocacy organization, and I interned there. And it turned out that I interned there, and while I was there, it turns out I was pretty good at grant writing. And so they didn't have a spot for me to hire me there, but the CARE Minnesota development job opened up, and the executive director at ISRUN, the Somali women's organization, knew the Jelani Hussein, our executive director at CARE. And so that was kind of my in, and I interviewed there, and I've been there for almost 5 years now.
That's awesome.
So in a nutshell.
Yeah, you know, definitely intrigued by the Detroit part because I was born and raised in Detroit.
Yes.
You know, I think for development directors and grant writers in specific, like especially they bring such a much needed perspective to nonprofit organizations. And, you know, we often talk a lot about the significance of building relationships with foundations and having them support more Muslim-led initiatives. So I wanted to ask you a little bit more about like some of the foundations or private family foundations you're applying to and kind of building that relationship for Muslim-led institutions like CARE.
Well, I think what I've learned in all of this 5 years that I've been there, that it's all about relationships. We are very, very fortunate here at CARE Minnesota to have some really wonderful relationships with our program officers at several pretty good big sized local foundations. The Bush Foundation, Headwaters, which is mainly social justice organization, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota. That's just to name a few. And this really is all about relationship building, as well as donors as well. But really with the foundations, it's very, very critical, I've found, to you know, just have the program officers really take an interest in what we do and make it very clear to them, because they're not the ones actually deciding you know, who gets the grants or not, but they're very influential with usually the board or the panel who's reviewing the grant applications, and their opinion about the applicant is usually very critical, and they can kind of, their say so I think is very influential, I think, as far as getting the grant or not getting the grant. And then I think years and years of building that relationship is just critical to the success of whether you're going to be funded or not. So yeah, it's very critical.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. And, you know, over the last few years, you've done a great job of introducing CARE Minnesota to American Muslim Community Foundation and also other CARE chapters across the country. So tell me a little bit more about your involvement. You mentioned that you've been with CARE Minnesota about 5 years. And, you know, how did CARE Minnesota start? If you want to go back into also a little bit of CARE National for our listeners.
Sure. Well, CARE National is, we're basically like a nonprofit franchise, if you will. CARE National is located in Washington, D.C., and we have 35 chapters across the U.S. we have been around. Care Minnesota started in 2007 after a group of Minnesota Muslims had been facing some discrimination themselves and heard about a lot of discrimination going on. There was a lot of discrimination, as you know, you're aware of, after 9/11. And I think it took a couple of years to get it going, but then in 2007, they incorporated and started a chapter here. It was about, you know, seven individuals who got it started. And Jelani's actually just our second executive director there. So it's really, we've really grown and we're still growing. And each chapter, what I found is extremely different. You're from Michigan originally. Dearborn, Michigan has got a completely different makeup of the Muslim community than Minneapolis does. It's remarkable. And I've been involved with grants training for CARE National. Every chapter, like in Michigan, for example, they hardly get any grants. Most of their funding does come in from donors, but the Muslim community there are well established and, have deep pockets, if you will. And so they can afford to be funded by donors mainly. So I've been kind of guiding a lot of different chapters on how to do grant research, how to go about approaching foundations. I think here in Minnesota, we're very extremely fortunate to have a really, really strong and generous philanthropic community here. And I'm not sure what the situation is in a lot of other states, but we've been very fortunate here in Minnesota to have just a very generous community. Looking at right now is we've got one national funder who's taken an interest in us and just the immigrant community here. Thank you, Ilhan Omar, and for kind of shining a light on the state of Minnesota. And we are trying to make our way into the Ford Foundation and some of the larger national foundations. That's kind of a goal of mine as we move forward into 2021.
That's great. And, you know, having lived in the San Francisco Bay Area the last 7 years, I've gotten to know the leadership here. And I know that, places like Silicon Valley Community Foundation support. And it's great to see that these mainstream philanthropic institutions are starting to give to the Muslim community.
That's wonderful, yeah.
You know, my argument is, you know, if Muslims make up 1% of the national population, are Muslim-led charities receiving 1% of philanthropic dollars? And, you know, there's a lot of opportunity there. I think that from the $450 billion that Americans gave in 2019, 90-some% comes from individuals. But right. Foundations make up a certain percentage of that, and corporate giving is only about 5%. So when people think about the different pockets of funding, you know, they, as you said, it's all about relationship building. But, you know, there's a really big opportunity for the Muslim community to receive funding from these mainstream philanthropic institutions. And I think it's great that you're trying to build relationships with the Ford Foundations and other. So in regards to, just like the leadership at CARE, like, you know, phenomenal leaders across the country. I've known, Dawood Waleed from being in Michigan for a long time, and Lena Musri moved on to the national staff from there.
Right, I love you.
And even CARE Florida was just recognized as a nominee for outstanding nonprofit from AMCF, for our philanthropy awards. So, you know, tell us a little bit more about some of the challenges that CARE as a national organization, and as you mentioned, as like a franchisee almost, kind of faces in the nonprofit sphere. I'm sure, you know, it's susceptible to all the challenges that we all face. But if you could generalize kind of what you feel some of the biggest challenges are for CARE or just some of these Muslim-led institutions in general?
Sure. Well, I think for CARE Minnesota in particular, because of how our community is, I think that this year, obviously COVID, like, you know, everyone is challenged with the lockdown and everything. What we have done, our response to it initially was our executive director immediately listened to a lot of the community leaders, mosque leaders, imams and so forth, in a lot of discussions regarding them having the possibility of them not being able to make payments on their buildings. That was kind of the discussion at first. And because they couldn't hold Juma on Fridays, and that was how they were doing their fundraising. And so we were able to partner with Propel for Nonprofits and get a $200,000 grant from the Minnesota Disaster Relief Fund. And we split that between 43 mosques. That's who mainly represent low-income immigrants. So that was really substantial. We've done weekly Facebook Live events. I think we're still doing some, just regarding having frontline workers, Muslim doctors mainly, you know, getting on Facebook Live and giving kind of a panel, and then doing question and answer sessions with the community. So those are a couple things we've been doing with regard to COVID. And then, you know, we're in Minneapolis, so we've had our response to George Floyd's killing was immediate. And we have been leading a coalition of social justice organizations in the Justice for George Floyd Coalition is what it's turned into. And that's with Communities United Against Police Brutality, Black Lives Matter of Minnesota, Justice for Jamal Clark, and some other organizations. So we're working on police reform, not just for the city of Minneapolis, but things that can be reformed that can happen throughout the state of Minnesota, because there is, you know, problems throughout the state. And this is, I guess you could say, like, well, how does this relate to Muslims exactly? And we really do view it as, you know, this is a civil rights issue. And we are a civil rights organization, and civil rights, when they are being violated for anybody, it affects everyone. So we're very involved in police reform and trying to make sustainable policy change at the city and county and state level. So I think those are the things that maybe do set us apart a little bit from other chapters at the moment, just at this point in time. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, having the state or city-based chapters is so effective, and you know, it takes a large network for you to do that. And you know, you were talking about donors with deep pockets or foundations that really invest in the local community, and I think having local presence makes all the difference as well.
Yes.
So I think the fact that Jelani, yourself, the rest of the team is embedded in the Minneapolis community and our surrounding areas across the state allows you to then approach those foundations and say, hey, we're right in your backyard. This is what we're doing. We're protecting the rights of all Americans and have a lens on the American Muslim community. So, you know, tell us about kind of how some of those relationships have evolved over time in terms of just showcasing the fact that the Muslim communities is there part and parcel with the social justice movements of the city.
Sure. Well, I think a lot of it is, I think it's taken a couple of program officers, it takes some convincing sometimes. And then I guess both Jelani and I kind of work at some of these people. people. And we go at it in a couple of different ways. We go at it with different discussions, I guess. It's kind of a two-pronged attack, I guess. Or let me not say attack, I'll say approach. And there are some program officers, I'm not going to name the foundations, but there's some local foundations who have this idea of what we are. And I think it's been interesting over the last few years to like kind of prove to them like, no, like what we're doing really does affect the whole community. We are associated with different social justice organizations. And it's not just about lately the murder of George Floyd, but we have always been leading social justice organizations. And I think the thing that, right. I think the thing that is interesting and a factor in all of this is that a lot of other social justice organizations are all volunteers. And the thing about CARE is that we have a couple of staff members who are paid staff people who are keeping the social justice movement alive. You know, the volunteers who run these other social justice organizations, they're very, very committed and everything. But I think there is something to that, to have a paid staff person working on coordinating and providing conferences and doing the actual coordination that I think is kind of critical to all this work. I think that, I don't know, I'm kind of meandering now about it, but working with the program officers has been, and staying in close touch, meeting with them, I mean, pre-COVID, sure, doing a lot of lunch meetings and coffee meetings and stuff like that has been very critical. And we don't always, you know, it's hard to make time for all that, but it's mm-hmm. been very necessary. One thing that's been really great this year is that I've been a one person development shop up until been this there. Year. We've hired Kate, who's our new fund development manager. She's going to take awesome. On more of the fundraising, donor kind of stuff. We're sharing duties right now. We're kind of still defining like the duties that she's going to do. I'm going to keep on with the grant stuff and the foundation mm-hmm. relationships. But that's going to be brilliant because I'm going to be able to, you know, work on the national foundations and yeah. to continue with the relationships that we've already got with local foundations, because it needs to be stewarded constantly, just as the donors all need to be stewarded as well.
Of course. So I wanted to ask, like, for any of the handful of foundations, like, how often are you reaching out? What are the, mm-hmm. you know, when you secure the meeting, what does that kind of look like for other mm-hmm. nonprofits that maybe are trying to do the same thing and could sure, learn from sure. your best practices?
Well, I think it's a matter of staying on top of the research. I always have a development intern who's doing research for us, how we might be. I give the development intern will have a list of criteria that I give them, you know, on what to be researching. We use the foundation directory online, which is CARE National pays for a subscription for us. It's been, I think it's one of the best research tools that we can have. We also use GrantWatch.
Yeah.
We use GrantWatch too. But I think foundation directory online has been one of the best tools that we've used. But I get the research lists in provided by the intern, and I look for deadlines, and I try to get a hold of people well before the deadlines. I don't call up a program officer a week before a grant is due. It's a lot of preparation. It's a lot yeah. of following up on the research. Uh-huh. And usually I start with an email introducing us if they've never heard of us. I did this recently, not that long ago, you know, really 2019, with a smaller family foundation located in St. Cloud, Minnesota. And the process of this was getting the ear of the program officer, getting her interested in a meeting. Now, this was all done long distance, but I did have an initial virtual meeting with her that went very well. And then we set up another conference between Jelani and our deputy director and myself. And then, you know, evidently we won her over. And then I sent a letter of intent. And then we were asked to do a full grant application, and then we got the award. And it was not a huge grant. It was $10,000, but mm-hmm. it opens up the door,
of course,
to further funding and the relationship. And then we're actually, you know, I think the other piece to it is that you be very diligent about accounting for the grant. And if they have a grant reporting system, to be very like be on time with your grant reports and do everything they ask you to do. And then touch base with them every once in a while, just to say hi, just drop them a line. And I think that's how it's just like a, you know, it's like any kind of relationship. You just follow up with them and you say hi every once in a while. But that's kind of one example of a recent relationship of how that building, you know, what went into building that relationship. And it's hard to just get their ear every once in a while. But I think knowing your story and having that solid writing and working on, you know, spending time on that is really important. That initial email mm-hmm. can make all the difference, I think.
Right. I think that this is a prime example of how to get your foot in the door.
Yes.
Pique their interest enough. Mm-hmm. And then the next meeting, bring in some senior members of the team, whether it's a board member or the executive director, loop them into the conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's phenomenal that, A, you have a intern to help you with some of the research. So I think that's a takeaway for a lot of other nonprofits is, you know, figure out what the Foundation Center is if you don't know what it is. Get those reports. What are some of the keywords that you're typing in when you do the searches
and also we pay a stipend to our interns.
That's awesome.
Something we don't have unpaid internships, and it's not a whole lot, but I think it's better than a lot. Like my internship was unpaid.
Yeah, so you knew that you needed to pay it forward. Yeah, definitely.
I think it's nice, you know.
Yeah.
But I have them look for terminology such as social justice, civil rights, immigrants and refugees. That's just enough to get them started.
Yeah.
But just those terminology plus state of Minnesota. So you can look by geography. Right. Sometimes I just have them start just with Minnesota and civil rights, like two terms, and then boil it down a little bit farther. And then it depends on if, recently we're doing police reform and, you know, that kind of work. So I break it down into further terminology depending on, and we're also trying to start a youth program. So I will throw youth interest and that kind of terminology in there for them as well.
That's super helpful to know. And in terms of like so many nonprofits either have a closed process or an open process, an invitation, mm-hmm. right? So are you only targeting the foundations that have an open process, or are you still trying to get the ear of those who maybe have an invite only?
I think we're trying for just about everything, you know, I guess. You know, the ones who are open are obviously, you know, I mean, that's kind of low-hanging fruit. But yeah, the invite onlys are, you know, we don't get those very often. That one in St. Cloud was invite only. So that was very, very nice. I mean, I really feel like that's, you know, even though it wasn't a whole lot of money, it was still like a really great relationship to start.
And it's a win, right? Like you,
it is an absolute win.
For sure.
And I think we can go back. We can probably ask for more money next year.
Exactly.
And I think it also says to other foundations who just do that St. Cloud area, and there are a few, there's a few smaller family foundations there. It's like, oh, they were good at stewarding, you know, this family foundation's money. They'll be okay with us too. And they're really doing important work in St. Cloud, Minnesota. There was the St. Cloud stuff. There was a what opened doors for us, kind of, I think, in this particular situation, was the New York Times article that came out last year about St. Cloud. That was one of the things that the national funder looked at, along with kind of the Ilhan factor. But there was a New York Times article last year talking about the situation in St. Cloud for Somalis and some of the resistance and the hate groups there. And it was, I forget what month it was. I think it was in summer of 2019. But it really shined a national light on what's going on in St. Cloud, Minnesota. And people were like, oh, we're shocked, you know? And there's a lot of challenges up there, more than even Minneapolis. And so anyway, you know, I think this foundation was really concerned about that, and knowing that CARE is doing something about it was very super important and really good for us to point out to them. So I think other foundations who care about the immigrant and refugee population in that area, I think are going to perk up their ears now and say, oh, CARE is really doing stuff there. And this foundation cares about that. And so we do too. And, you know, ergo, you know, hopefully it opens some doors for us.
Yeah. You know, since you have such a skill set in grant writing and this relationship building, I wanted to ask you, what were some things that helped you become a stronger grant writer?
Oh, I think definitely the fact that my predecessor, Darshina Hussein, who is now the executive director of RISE, what she left me some excellent basic language about the founding of CARE. That was excellent. And I'm still using a lot of it. So thank you, Nashi. And for a couple of years, I was called the new Nashi.
That's so funny.
She's an amazing person. She was an amazing
writer.
I'm still using some of that basic language that she had just about the reason that we got started. And there was some really good basic language that she had. And that helped me, you know, greatly. And I've you know, been manipulating the language and so forth to, you know, to update it and such. But yeah, there's some basic language in there that she wrote that really helped me a lot. And I'm, you know, I'm a pretty good writer, I guess. I take a lot of help. Jelani helps me a lot with the social justice lingo. Mm-hmm. He's excellent with that, and he helps me a lot with using the right, I guess, the right buzzwords.
Sure.
I don't want to call it trendy, but there's some social justice words that I think certain people are looking for, and there are phrases and stuff like that. That's just kind of my take on it is that there are certain there's certain phrasing that he knows that I don't. So, mm-hmm. Well, but I get a lot of assistance from him.
Yeah, and I think that's a prime example. Like, you know, an organization might just hire a development director and say, here, go do it. But you have the partnership of your executive director, of your team. There's different layers of people all in the process. So I think it's really phenomenal that you have this model and it's proven effective.
Yes.
So I want to also ask, you know, have there been, you know, other trainings or other things that you've done that other people can kind of learn from and try to replicate at their organizations?
Sure. I think that my best trainings have come from the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. And if you have nonprofits, if you have a state organization that offers trainings, we have a membership to a council of nonprofits, go to those trainings. But the National Council on Foundations, I think, also has a lot of grant training. I belong to the Nonprofit Leadership Lab, which has a grant writing boot camp that I found was extremely helpful. And even though I've got experience as a grant writer, I did the boot camp just to see if I was like missing some things But they had a lot of really good advice about the whole relationship building. I've been kind of doing my own brand of relationship building, and you know, just kind of winging it, I guess, just kind of doing it on my own. And I've been pretty successful at it, but they had some really good advice. So joining boot camps and do, you know, finding, going out there and just actively seeking grant writing workshops and things of that nature. But if you have a membership to a statewide, you know, council on founded nonprofits, that's really, really helpful, I think.
That's great. And then have you been able to leverage your relationship with program officers to get introduced to other foundations and kind of just talk through that process?
Yes, absolutely. I think that especially once I really do get to know program officers very well, they're more than happy because they know each other. You know, they do, and I think that they communicate with each other, and that's why it's good to really like have good relationships. Don't make them mad. That's my one piece
good advice. Yeah,
don't make them mad because they do talk to each other, and you know, some of them are a little prickly, and they, some of them really, this one I'm thinking of does think that she knows everything about us, and it's not necessarily, you know, the correct thing. And you know, this one in particular that Jelani and I have kind of had to work on a little bit, but she does talk to other people, and I think it's good to just keep that in mind. But yes, they can definitely, they are usually, once you've got a really good thing going with them, they are more than happy to, if you say to them, you know, there's a process of, you know, there's an application opening up soon with this foundation. Do you know them? Mm-hmm. And could you drop, you know, could you just introduce me with an email or something like that? I would really appreciate it. And they're usually more than happy to do that. Yeah. But that's the beauty of, you know, developing that relationship. I just got an introduction to a specific person at Ford Foundation.
Nice.
And so, yeah. And, you know, I've been sending LOIs to Ford Foundation for years now, and they just, and we're, I know we're a total fit for them. You know, based on all the things that I read in their newsletters and the funding that they do grant to people, but they've hardly given anything to anybody in Minnesota. And I've just needed to have, like, I need to get someone's ear there. And I think I have the right program officer now. I'm going to, that's something that's on my plate either today or next week, that I'm going to write to this person. And
nice.
Hopefully have an in now. But yeah, that's how we do.
Great. No, you know, you've been able to share a lot of great gems, and I hope that people listening can implement these best practices at their nonprofits. And, you know, what advice do you have to, you know, you made a career shift. So what advice do you have to people who are considering making that shift into the nonprofit world?
I think it's just very important. And I say this, we do hire a lot of interns. And I do say to some of them are, they're actually, many of them are kind of like, I don't know what to do with my life. And I said, you don't have to figure it out right now. But I think the important thing for people is that if you're doing something right now and it doesn't feed you and doesn't feed your soul, don't spend a lot of time doing it. I had a job that for many years didn't fulfill me. I just didn't feel like I was giving back to anybody. I didn't feel like I was doing anybody any good, and that didn't feel good, and it showed. And now in this second career doing in the nonprofit world, I feel like I'm serving a mission, a really good mission, and I'm benefiting people. And I really feel like I finally found my niche. And it just feels really good. So that's my piece of advice, is that don't spend a lot of time doing something that doesn't make you feel good.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Patty. I really
You're so
appreciate
welcome.
you. The one thing I did want to ask is we do love to ask our guests, what are three nonprofits that you personally give to and why? And we can close out there. And definitely expecting Care Minnesota is one of those. So what are other charities that you personally support?
Yeah, well, I do give to Care. I'm a small monthly donor. But I also give to RISE. It's Reviving the Islamic Sisterhood for Empowerment. That's Nashina's. And let's see, I also give to, I've been a volunteer at a community radio station, KFAI. It's Fresh Air Community Radio. I've been involved there ever since I moved here to Minnesota. And I do a radio show there. I've done a couple of radio shows there.
Nice.
So I give generously to them. Let's see. There's a few others. I give to Community Shares of Minnesota. They are like an employee giving plan for nonprofit for social justice organizations. I give to Headwaters. I give to, there's probably three more that I give to, and I can't think of who they are right now. But they're all kind of social justice organizations and things of that nature.
That's awesome. And you know, one of the ways in which AMCF hopes to help families be more strategic with their charitable giving is through donor advised funds and
Yes.
being able to utilize DAFs to help people get consolidated receipts at the end of the year. You just
Yeah.
named like five charities, and I'm sure there's five more that you could name.
Absolutely.
And a donor advised fund will make it a lot easier for families to contribute to all of those charities.
Absolutely.
So, you know, thank you so much. We're so grateful for your work that you do at Care National and Care Minnesota. Thank you so much for being on the podcast and looking forward to working with you in the future as well.
Great. Thank you so much for this opportunity. This has been really a pleasure to talk with you.
Likewise.